Welcome in to the Pick Aside Podcast, a recap edition. Shane Orling and Tyler Aki with you as always. As always, we're available on YouTube, youtube.com/@PickAsideESPN. Also available wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Pod, wherever. Please rate, review, subscribe on YouTube. Click that subscribe button, leave a comment, like a video. It does help us out. Tyler, how you doing?
I'm good. You're looking festive today.
Thank you.
I'm not going to lie. When I saw you when I walked in the building, I was kind of blindsided. I was like, damn, Shay looks like he's about to go to a Christmas party or something.
My wife got me some early Christmas gifts, okay. And I decided to break it out for Monday, a cheery Monday.
There you go. You're looking festive. Looks
Thank
good
you.
On you.
Appreciate it. I what feel good.
What kind of ant? Is that a wolf or a moose or what's on there? A buffalo?
That looks like a buffalo. And that and also looks like a buffalo.
That might be a moose on the right.
Maybe, yeah, this might be a moose. That, I think, is a buffalo. Circle the wagon.
Do buffaloes and moose coexist, though? Like, there may be a little bit of a ecological error on your sweater.
No, they're in the same place. They're both mountain animals.
Yeah, but I feel. When do you ever see, like, a buffalo and a moose cross paths? I feel like that's fiction.
When have you ever seen a buffalo? Have you seen a moose?
Never. I think I have seen a moose before.
I've seen buffalo. I saw buffalo in Utah.
But have a buffalo and a moose ever been in the same room?
Probably. Maybe not a room.
Makes you think. I don't even feel like you find them both at a zoo.
I've seen. Well, what zoo has moose?
I don't know.
I've seen moose. Zoo. I think I saw moose in British Columbia once. A moose.
Yeah, that makes sense. That checks out. Did you see a buffalo there?
No, but it was a ski hill.
All right, so we've got a fact error on your sweater.
Buffalo. Okay, you know what? I don't
Good
appreciate
going,
this.
Good going, Kenz.
Fact error. It's just the wildlife. I liked the sweater. Jesus.
It is a great
Thank
sweater.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
I'm not denying
it.
That, but now it's going to bother me that you've got a fact error on your sweater all the time.
It's not a fact error. They occupy the same ecological biome.
I don't
biome.
Know if they do.
You know what? Let's ask AI. Lord knows I need to hit my ChatGPT quota for the week.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think. It doesn't sound like a... Like, whales and sharks... Both are in the water, but like you don't see whales and sharks coexist.
What is this? I don't want the short answer. I want the long answer. Give me the long answer, you fucking idiot.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry. Now you've got a digital transcript of that.
I'm sorry. I was a little too angry.
What do we got?
Moose live mostly in boreal forests, wetlands, and colder northern climates. Buffalo, technically American bison, live mostly in grasslands, prairies, and open plains. Their preferred habitats don't overlap much, so encounters are rare. Where their ranges touch, like part of Alberta, British Columbia, or the northern U.S. Rockies, which, by the way, are all the places that I've ever seen buffalo, they may be in the same region, but not typically side by side.
Okay. Glad to be validated.
In Europe, moose and bison do sometimes share forests, though they tend to use different resources in space.
Something about that. They tend to use different resources in space.
What was the... was it Zoo Books? The infomercial magazine that would give you animal facts when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Zoo books.
I vaguely remember those, yeah.
I'm going to go back and read those.
Yeah.
Get some more information.
Pick some zoo books up.
All right. Wild start to the show. I hope everybody enjoyed the science hour before we get to the football of it. What else is going on? What did we miss? Anything? We good to go?
Football-wise.
Nice ESPN hoodie. Yeah. I don't know where to go now. You've totally broken my brain.
See, golf and ESPN coexist in the wild.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. No, awesome football weekend.
It was incredible.
Like, it was probably the best football weekend of the year, through my memory real quick. But
I think so.
High stakes, great games. Even the bad matchups were great games for the most part. Everything about it was great this weekend.
High stakes is interesting because I think what we learned is in college, the stakes of a conference title game don't exist. They're not real. North Texas Tulane was the only game that actually meant anything, really. Every other game just was either chalk and we knew it was going to happen or the committee rendered it meaningless. So we'll start college because that's, I think, just going to be the quicker conversation and it's the most boring to me because, frankly, the take that I've landed on where everybody's wringing their hands about Notre Dame versus Miami and how is Alabama possibly in the field, where I have landed is the college football playoff expansion to 12 teams works for when it was four, we would have known Indiana and Ohio State are in. Mm-hmm. And then we would have had to take Georgia, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, and Ole Miss, all of who have a claim, and say only two of you can go on to the playoff. Under this system, we can put all of those teams into the college football playoff and also include Tulane and, in this case, James Madison, which I think is a rarity and a one-off.
Hilarious. By the way, we did some accounting from earlier in the year. I went back and searched our playoff draft because we had a wager at stake, and we were like, you know what? To make things, because we figured 11 power conference teams would get in and then a group of five. And we're like, all right, so we don't tie at the end of the year. We're not going to, no group of five teams can be selected. So naturally, two group of fives get in, and what do you know?
We tied. It's unbelievable.
Pleasure doing business with you.
Yeah, what a stalemate. No, but the point I'm making is, like, you get the teams that actually should be in the playoff, and you don't have to split hairs about which ones you qualify. And any team that falls below really that Oklahoma line, I don't care about you. I don't want to hear from you. Like, you should be happy you're in the conversation at all. Mm-hmm. I don't need you in my playoff. You're not winning a national title. Do we really believe the way Alabama's played that they're winning a national title? No, they got sun. Do we think Miami?
No, if Bama's playing at their best, Bama had a lot of injuries that I feel like kind of went under the radar before that SEC championship.
Was it 13 players out?
They had a number of injuries, some key pieces too, running backs out, tight ends out. Like, you had a number of injuries. Now, I don't think it necessarily made a difference in the game, but are we talking about Alabama differently if this game is 28-21 or 28-24? We probably feel a little bit different.
But they are, like, they're a 4.5-point favorite going to
Oklahoma, yeah.
Oklahoma. And they already lost to Oklahoma. And I don't think Oklahoma's even championship caliber. So you just look at all of it and go, we got the teams in that should be in, and then there's six other teams that should just be happy to be here. And if you couldn't qualify, that's a you issue. I don't need to hear from you. Notre Dame doing that, we're taking our ball and going home routine. What a bunch of losers.
Yeah. It's comical. And then you get the sorry car wash tour today with their AD going around saying, oh, we've done, the ACC has done major damage to the relationship with Notre Dame. You don't want to be in the ACC.
No.
At all for football. You like it for all of your other sports, but for football, you don't give a shit. You got 28 million reasons why last year you're never going to join the ACC for football. Like, okay, the one-off. You're not in the playoff this year. Guess what? I'm guessing more often than not, for the next 5 to 10 years, Notre Dame will be in the college football playoff, and they won't have to share any of the revenue money. And as a result of that, they're never going to join the conference. And frankly, if I'm the ACC, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't
care.
Like, if I'm the ACC, I look at Notre Dame and I go, we're not going to be your useful idiot.
Yeah.
And sign up to play this schedule just so that you can make fools of us at the end of the season or complain. Mm-hmm. It's so dumb to me because it all boils down very simply. If you wanted to be in the playoff, you should have beat Miami, period.
Or A&M.
There's no other way to complain. Oh, our season came down to our holder dropping the ball, so you should put us in the playoff. Your issue's with your holder.
Yeah.
It's not with the playoff committee. Mm-hmm. Like, your issue, we lost by 3 to Miami. Yeah, your issue is you didn't win the game. Mm-hmm. It's not with the committee.
Yeah. Like, if Notre Dame had even won that game and dropped another game later on in the year, let's say they lose to Pitt or something like that later on in the year, they're probably in the playoff.
Yeah.
Because you would have the head-to-head with Miami at that point, and that's one of the teams in question.
Now, I will also say, I think that we've learned at this point, if they're going to stick with 12, if they go to 16 teams, really regardless of what they choose to do, and I do think they're going to go to 16, no more weekly rankings, please. We don't need them.
Or at least go by your guidelines.
If the committee's just going to decide at the end of the season that the only one that matters is this one, which is true, but they're going to say we don't value our old rankings, that's just then don't release them. Because I do really genuinely, in my heart of hearts, believe if this was the first ranking that everybody got eyes on, nobody would complain. It would kind of just make sense to everyone.
Well, and the other part of it, why I don't have a huge issue with, not even that, like, I would have put Notre Dame and Miami in over Alabama, but the issue that I have is really not with the process as a whole, but it's just like, my issue is, why was BYU some DMZ line between Notre Dame and Miami the whole time? Like, even looking at those two resumes side by side, I still would have taken the Notre Dame resume over the BYU resume. Yep. But then you're telling me Miami has a better resume than Notre Dame, but for some reason they can't jump past BYU because of this. Like, it didn't make sense why this was some border between these two teams. And because BYU got manhandled in their conference title game, you saw what happened with Miami jumping past Notre Dame. Like, I don't understand that. You're talking about a three-team ranking that the committee was essentially creating with those three teams there.
Yeah.
And you said the third team had a better resume than the first team, but because the second team existed, we can't put the third team ahead of the first. Like, the whole thing didn't make sense.
And honestly, I keep hearing from Notre Dame fans griping. I got to be honest with everybody. BYU fans are the ones who should feel screwed because they have the best resume of the bunch.
Just ask their Twitter account.
Which, honestly, fair play, because the tweet that they put out detailed everything you need to know. BYU's better than you in strength of schedule. They're better than you in strength of record. The resume matches up better. They only lost to one team all year, albeit they lost twice. But I do find it a little interesting that the committee is telling us the Big Ten title does not matter. Those two teams switched spots. Neither of them fell meaningfully for that game to have any impact at all. The SEC title does not matter. Bama got manhandled. Bama fell a grand total of zero spots. So explain to me why the Big 12 title mattered. If you're telling me that the Big 10 and SEC title don't, why does the Big 12?
I don't even think the Big 12 title mattered, to be honest.
It did, because they were ahead of Miami, and they said they moved BYU down because of their play.
I guess, but like BYU, like, in fairness, like BYU got their dicks kicked in twice to Texas Tech.
And those were I don't feel like BYU.
Those were the only games of true consequence that I know you're going to cite all the like people, and BYU fans especially are citing all of like the strength of victory and strength of record and strength of schedule and all that stuff. When you look at their schedule versus the other schedules too, it does not compute. It does not match up even slightly. They put Notre Dame's case, all right? Notre Dame played two teams this year that made it to the college football playoff. They lost by a grand total of 4 points.
Yeah.
BYU was getting run out of the gym, run off the field in the first half by way more than 4 points in both of those games.
They got their eyes fucked out by Texas Tech.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't have any sympathy for the BYU fans feeling like they got screwed.
But I don't have sympathy for anyone.
I don't have sympathy for Notre Dame fans that feel like they got screwed. Because at the end of the day, I think the committee, in terms of, you may not have liked the path to get there, but in the Notre Dame versus Miami argument, the committee got it right. I can't be mad about that. Yeah. Now, if you want to throw in Notre Dame versus Alabama, all right, have at it. Because I think that's a different conversation.
I agree.
There. But if Notre Dame fans are mad at the ACC or at Miami, you're swinging at ghosts. You're fighting the wrong fight there. It should be your gripe with the SEC and with Alabama.
Well, the problem, too, is just like I was told when we expanded this, we wouldn't have these arguments.
We're always going to argue.
I know, but
we argue about teams 69, 70, and 71 and 72 in college basketball.
I'm making a point. I was told when we expanded this, it would be so we wouldn't have to have the arguments. And the same people who got mad about teams 5 and 6 being left out of a 4-team playoff are now the same people who get mad about teams 12 and or 13 and 14 being left out of a 12-team playoff. And then turn it into, it's almost a worse thing now. Because at least when it was the 4-team playoff, you'd be upset that Florida State is on the outside looking in and you felt like they got slighted. Now it's become a different deal where people are just shitting on Group of Five schools for no other reason than you're a Group of Five school. I shouldn't have to watch Texas fans screen grab Ole Miss versus Tulane and go, great, we get to see this again. Hey, Texas, newsflash. You got bombed by Georgia. Blowouts don't discriminate. Mm-hmm. 45-10 Ole Miss Tulane is no different to me than 35-10 Georgia Texas. Blowouts are all equal. So it's just like, stop. Just shut up. And I know that everybody's always going to fight and I'm never going to get what I want. But if you were the person who would get angry about teams 5 and 6 and you wanted 12 so you wouldn't have to do that, then don't be the person who's angry about 13 and 14. Because when we go to 16 in a year, God knows there will be idiots angry about 17 and 18, and I won't have time for that.
It's always going to happen. It's sports. It's why we love it. Like, we can complain and bitch about it right now, but part of why we love the college football playoff is because of the debate and the argument about who is the 11th and 12th team that get into the playoff. Who are the final at-large spots? We're always going to have these arguments. We could expand this thing out to 128, and we'd be arguing about teams 129 and 130.
Yep.
It's just the way this thing's always going to be.
I'd also just say, can we get rid of the Bulls, please? The bowl system's just got to be
fine.
It's got to be done. I mean, you get Notre Dame doing this sad sack sob story, take our ball and go home, like the losers that they've decided they are. I did have one person offer the theory to me that Marcus Freeman has done the take my ball and go home so that he can escape to the NFL and save face with the fan base.
Interesting.
Which I at first I was like, that sounds ridiculous.
I don't think-
and then I was like, wait a minute.
I don't think Notre Dame fans, not that they don't love Marcus Freeman, but Marcus Freeman going to the NFL is kind of, I get it.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't think any fan base is really all that upset when their coach leaves for the NFL.
But the problem is, like, they put out the bowl matchups, and then it's just a waiting game as you get the Pete Thamel notification, X team has declined their invite, like Baylor.
Right.
Baylor doesn't want to play in their bowl game. And then you get the next one. We've asked all of these 5 and 7 teams if they'd like to play Georgia Southern in a bowl, and they all said no. So we're still looking for an opponent for Georgia Southern. And I'm like, at some point, can we just do away with this? Because it's a joke.
Or if we're going to do it, I mean, and this is no original thought. I saw Tom Crean say this a year ago when when teams were turning down the, what was it, the NIT invites?
Yeah.
They were turning down like a couple years ago. And it is a valid point. Like, and maybe it's a little bit different football to basketball because the rosters are smaller and all that. But, you know, like for some of these kids on that Notre Dame team, this is going to be the last time they ever get to play the game.
Yeah.
You are taking away a potential chance for these guys to play a game. These staffs are so big. And if guys don't want to play, guys don't want to play. But it should be decisions of the individual.
Yeah.
And the individual should not be making the decisions for the teams. For some guy who's going off to the NFL and is going to go have a 10-year career in the league, to be able to make a decision that impacts the guy who's never going to be able to play another down of football and has played it his entire life. Like, you always hear the story, like, some people are told to, like, they can't play anymore. Some people are told in eighth grade. Some people are told when they're 40 that, like, your time is up playing the game.
Yep.
And this is one last time for some of these people to put on the uniform, and these coaching staffs are so big these days. Like, let the DC go out and coach the game for a game. The result doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But let the kids go out and play the game. Let a coach maybe get an opportunity. We see it in the preseason in the NFL. Head coaches and the normal play callers usually aren't the ones calling the plays.
Yeah.
It is the assistants that are calling the plays because they're getting their feet wet for a potential head coaching job somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I think that's the part that really I have trouble with lately, and especially this weekend watching the reaction to the playoff reveal, was there are so many people who talk about this sport with so much disdain. With there's almost an anger from the people who are like, let's expand it to 24 or 28 teams. And I'm like, well, that would totally bastardize not only bowl season, but the regular season. And the reply often is like, nobody cares about seeing these two small schools in the Relia Quest Bowl or like pick your joke sponsor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm sorry, when was that bowl game ever about people caring about watching it? They're not playing that for you. It means if Eastern Michigan is bowl eligible, it does mean something at Eastern Michigan, and the players on that team earned it, the opportunity to go play it. But it's like the more and more we feed the beast of get this to be as popular for the regular and casual fan as we can, the more and more you sideline all of those other games and all those smaller schools and all those hundreds of thousands of athletes who are never going to see a down in the NFL and just want one last game. and they're getting hit with this like vitriol from the college football fan that's like, I don't care about seeing you in the Chef Boyardee Bowl, bitch. And I'm like, what are you? It's not about that.
Then don't watch.
Right. You don't have. Nobody's making you watch. But
Everything. Everyone always acts like they're a prisoner and beholden to having to watch everything. No, just don't watch what you don't want to watch. Like what you like. Watch what you want to watch. And if you don't want to watch it, you don't have to eat it.
Like, that's where the Baylor and Notre Dame stuff bothers me. Is like another team earned the right to play this game as well, and you're telling them kick rocks, and that's shitty.
Yeah.
Notre Dame telling BYU kick rocks. That's shitty. Baylor telling whoever the fuck they got matched up with, like, we don't care about you enough. We're more worried about 2026. That sucks.
Yeah. And if whoever's in charge of creating these bowl matchups wants to say, hey, we'll take a 4-8 team, then take the 4-8 team. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, nobody cares. That's the other thing, is these bowl directors are so fucking proud of themselves. And they, like, the easiest way to do this is 16-team playoff, and it starts, honestly, this weekend. But the bowl directors are like, oh, don't step on our bowls. This is the part where I do kind of agree with the casual fan. Nobody's watching this shit.
So put it during the week. Like, we're not playing playoff games on Tuesday and Wednesday. Like, just put it during the week.
You know, nobody's sitting down and watching the Duke's Mayo Bowl. What are you so angry about that you're getting covered up by the college football quarterfinal?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Just everybody work together, rip the Band-Aid off, and let's get this sport to a place where we can stop being so toxic about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
As I swear, a lot of people don't even like it. I don't care. The bottom line playoff teams, go fuck yourselves. I don't care. I'm glad that we don't have to fight about the teams that can actually win a title. And I do feel that way, because I know a lot of people are thinking right now, if I say that, hey, dumbass, Notre Dame and Ohio State were 8 and 9 seeds, and they're not 7 and 8 seeds, and they made the final. Yeah, but also last year, conference champions got automatic buys, and that doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So the best of the best is where they belong, and I don't really think anybody below the looking at it below the 5 line has any prayer of winning a national title. Fair? Maybe Bama, but that would be the only one.
I could see A&M. And to be honest, I know you're not going to agree with me. I could see a world where Miami wins a title.
I'll tell you what I'm rooting for. How about the world where Ole Miss rises up like Leviathan?
I'd love it. I'd love it. To be honest, I'd love if any of those 5 through 10 teams won.
And then poor LSU in the cuck chair has to fork over money to Lane Kiffin for a title that he didn't coach them to a victory.
He wanted them that
it
bad.
It would be so incredible.
That probably wasn't even a clause that they were at that he was asking for.
Speaking of clauses,
oh yeah,
just very quickly before we get to the NFL, how in the world did Notre Dame convince the committee or the CFP to approve a clause where they are promised a playoff berth if they're ranked inside the top 12 going forward?
And it's what? It's top 12 in next year, and then if it ever expands to 14,
it's top 13.
It's top 13, but if it expands to 16, then all this goes out the window?
Yeah. So they're going to obviously they're going to expand to 16. But
middle finger Notre Dame, yeah.
The reality is, if you have a 16-team playoff, Notre Dame should never miss it.
For sure.
And them missing it would be an utter failure on their part.
Yeah.
It could never be construed as them getting screwed.
Yeah. Point thumbs, not fingers in that case.
But I do think, like, if you stick at 12, and now we're talking about if you're ranked in the top 12, you'll be guaranteed a spot. Why the fuck do they get that benefit?
Yeah. I will say this. Not that I agree that they should have the benefit. I don't. But UConn better have the same thing. If this is just because Notre Dame stomps their feet a little bit louder than UConn ever would for a college football playoff berth, like, does UConn have this benefit too?
Let's be fair. Notre Dame also swings a bigger sack around.
They do.
With their money, not their balls. I found the whole thing disgusting. I'm like, how does the CFP kowtow in this spot instead of just saying, if you want the guarantee of getting in, play in a fucking conference?
Yeah. I don't get it.
It doesn't seem that difficult to me.
And Notre Dame's not changing. Notre Dame's not going to a conference. They're not making an example out of Notre Dame this year.
And I know they will never do it, but my argument would be, and it has been, nobody should accommodate them. If Notre Dame doesn't want to join the party and act like it's actually 2025, then the CFP shouldn't be giving them these stupid memorandum of understanding and the clause.
It's a fucking handout.
You're promised a spot. And also, Power 4 schools should refuse to put them on their schedule. Just don't play them. Make them play a G5 schedule. Mm-hmm. Good luck getting into the top 12.
Yeah. You got to go undefeated at that point. You live on the knife edge every single week.
Yeah, and if you go undefeated, great. We'll put you in the playoff and probably bomb you out of it. But, like, nobody should be playing ball with them anymore.
No. I get some teams like the money and the exposure and all that that comes with playing Notre Dame or hosting Notre Dame.
Great. Go play Rutgers. You know what I mean? That's the Power Four school that is allowed to schedule Notre Dame. Rutgers.
Yeah.
Mississippi State, you can schedule Notre Dame.
Boston College, probably Syracuse is lumped into there too, but like that's it.
That you guys can play Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Baylor, you want to play Notre Dame? Have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But like enough with the we get Wisconsin USC? Or Ohio State or USC or like no, not anymore.
Nope. Yeah.
Not playing Michigan. Michigan State put in the call. We're canceling the home and home starting next year. We're not doing it. Like it's just I would never play them. There is no benefit.
Yeah. None. I mean, well, in fairness, I feel like that Notre Dame game. I guess the flip side of that, though, is like Miami's not in the playoff without the Notre Dame game.
Correct.
A&M may not be in the playoff without the Notre Dame game.
But that's this year before the Memorandum of Understanding.
That's true.
If, like in future seasons, that spot goes promised to Notre Dame. That's where that bothers me. And if I would never play them. Because they've just admitted they've erased any ability for that game to benefit you if you play it.
I wonder if they would have bumped Bama. If this was in effect this year, if they would have bumped Bama.
If that's the case, then they should have bumped Bama anyway. But this is the field we got.
Yep. Listen, I'm gonna enjoy these games. I think these are actually some pretty solid first round games too.
I think the home games are spectacular location wise too. Yeah, this is gonna be stellar. All right, let's get to the NFL.
Let's do it.
So I said I'd wait till Monday. I am going to play the Chargers tonight. I want to get that out of the way as early as possible. I'm going to play the Chargers plus the 2.5. It speaks to me in a way I can't really explain. But I think the Eagles are in their death spiral. I think it's nightmare time.
Before we proceed here, I opened up my phone and I got a text.
Oh, no.
I got a text from Jesse. This is for you and me here. Right? I got a text from Jesse. He texted me the tweet from ESPN PR congratulating him on reaching an extension with him. Get some applause, man. This guy's the greatest.
Just gave me a fucking headache.
The absolute greatest.
Put me on, kid.
I love Jesse. Should I call him right now and let's congratulate him?
No. No. Call him on the hotline. Call him on Waddle and Sylvie today. Interrupt the Bears-Packers Monday so that we can congratulate.
Breaking news,
buddy. Yeah. Hey there, buddy. I got extended.
Incredible.
He's been trying to get on Cap'n'Ode because of the winter meetings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's doing the same thing with me.
He's doing it with Abdallah, too.
Yeah.
We're all being victimized by Jesse. The tweet of his extension is insane.
The PR tweet. It's so good.
I'm still processing that. Why would he do that? Breaking news, buddy. Hit the sounder.
The funny thing is, you know how like you get a text from someone when it's a tweet and you see like who it's from? Like it says ESPN PR. The second I saw that, I already knew what it was going to be. He had never told me anything about an extension or anything like that, but
so happy for you, Jesse. So happy for you. Okay, let's
love
react.
Jesse, by the way, love him.
He's the best. He's honestly great. Let's react to the NFL. I'm going to play again our favorite game. I like doing this
like
every week where we take the biggest games and just ask.
Let's do it.
Steelers Ravens. Who does it say more about? Steelers beat the Ravens 27-22. Tomlin resurgent will not be denied a winning record. It feels like now. But who does this game say more about? I have a very strong opinion.
I think it's the Ravens.
I agree.
Now, I will say this. I am going to give credit. Aaron Rodgers turned the clock back in this game. Some of those downfield plays, what did he have? Like 4 completions of 20-plus yards in this game. Like he had some of those vintage Rodgers-type plays. The one he found down the sideline to Calvin Austin. The couple that he found to DK Metcalf. He was incredible in this game. And that's not to take away from him. But the Ravens are dog shit. Like, it's my biggest fear with them all along is that Lamar has not looked the part since he's come back from injury. I've never thought that this team should be as prohibitive of a favorite moving forward. You just lost a home game.
Yeah.
When you're battling for the AFC North and you're not the team that I have really snuffed you out to be, and you've got the schedule that you've got the rest of the way, this team may only win one more game the rest of the year. Like, looking at their schedule, you're at Cincy next week, then you host the Patriots, you're at Green Bay, and then you're on the road against Pittsburgh to close out the season. You may win one game the rest of the year.
Yeah.
This is a 7-10 football team, and they've looked every bit of it all season long.
They're not good, and Lamar is the biggest concern. And look, I don't feel bad about being the guy who sat here and said, I think the Ravens are going to win this division. They'll run everybody down. They'll get the job done. If you told me that Lamar would be this, I never would have said it. And it's just, I don't know if it's injury or I don't know what it is, but it is like the little game Lamar thing. It is so much who he is.
Mm-hmm.
In big spots, he's a total zero. And it really stands out yesterday. The interception, awful. And the sack to end the game. Not that you have a shot at winning realistically. Like, it's going to come down to throwing the ball lateral, hook and ladder, let's get down the field. But the one thing that you can never, ever do is go to the ground with the football in
your
hand.
You're better off throwing up a prayer.
And it's just, every time we see the Ravens in a do-or-die spot, Lamar comes up small. I think it just speaks bounds about them. I'm also going to add in this. I don't know if people have seen it. And it's ostensibly as legitimate as a message board thing can get. Have you seen the Ravens Reddit thing where a player's ex-girlfriend aired out the team's dirty laundry?
I didn't see this.
And the moderators of the subreddit said that she verified the ID. She's basically going, they all want John Harbaugh fired. They're all partying. They have to have security in the hotel room because they're going out all the time. They're sneaking out. I'm like, the vibes here seem terrible. It just... big spots, you can't trust Lamar. I think John Harbaugh has been around too long. It's gone stale.
Which team do you think needs the divorce more?
Can I
Steelers
say both?
Tomlin or Harbaugh and the Ravens?
Is it wrong if I say both? Just, like, enough. It's been 15 years for both of you since you won anything anybody gives a fuck about. Like, just move on.
Yeah.
I think they would both be benefited from finding new head coaches.
And I also think they would not benefit from trading their head coaches. Like, if they did a head coach swap, which would be unparalleled, divisional head coach swap
between two historic rivals,
Hall of Famers, too, that would be ridiculous. But I don't think either team would sign up for it either.
No, because it would be the same thing, just a different version.
Yeah, you'd be running in place.
I thought it said the most. I don't think the Steelers are any good. I think the Steelers probably at this point, they obviously have the inside track. It seems
Steelers are what they've been for the past 5-7 years. That's
it
what
seems
they are.
Really prohibitive that they don't end up winning that division, and I cannot wait to bet against them in the first round of the playoffs. It's just exactly what the Steelers have always been.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Saints-Bucks. This is not who does it say more about, because we know the answer.
Yeah.
But are the Bucks cooked? Like, can we just stick a fork in them?
Is this division wrapped up, too?
I mean, I'm not going there. You got to win. Carolina's got to win both the games.
Both teams still have their destiny ahead of them here. But, I mean, what do the tiebreakers look like?
This was the worst result imaginable if you're Tampa Bay. Not only losing, you lost at home to the Saints in a week where you could have extended a narrow lead over Carolina. And now you're in a tie at the top of the division. Carolina's coming off a bye for the rest of the season. Like, it just, Tampa's been so banged up. The early season magic is totally gone. They aren't winning end-of-game scenarios anymore. They aren't winning close games anymore. They just feel done.
Is Baker kind of turning into like the Kyler Murray, where he looks like the MVP of the league for the first 8-10 weeks, and then all of it goes sideways? Like, part of it is the injuries, but Baker has not looked good.
No.
Even slightly.
I won't say it's Kyler, because I think Kyler's got some other stuff going on, and you see it when, like, Arizona makes the decision. He's not going to play anymore, and we're probably going to get rid of him. I think Baker's really tough. He might be my favorite player in the NFL.
But he wears down.
Yeah, at some point, like, he takes so many hits and sustains so many injuries. At some point, somebody's got to save him from himself.
Yeah.
He can't keep playing through these torn shoulders.
Yeah.
Like, you've got a torn labrum, dude. This is what killed you in Cleveland.
Yeah, and it's what people made people think, all right, cast him away. We don't need him anymore.
I think he's still good. It's just it's gone south this season so much, and the magic that they had early in the year. I mean, even Ibuka has fallen off considerably. Ibuka dropping a walk-in touchdown yesterday. Yeah. I'm like, what in the world? Everything that was good about them, it feels like, is totally soured as the season's gone on.
Yep.
I want to bring up Colts-Jags, too,
yeah,
because this was a really sucks, important man. Result, and it's not like a who does it say more about. The Colts are done. The Colts are going to lose out at the season. I think that's pretty likely at this point. They're now going to play Riley Leonard against the Seahawks, Niners, Jags, and Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Because Daniel Jones had a broken leg, and then in his opposite leg, tore his Achilles.
Yeah.
Which is like, maybe don't play your quarterback on a broken leg. But also the timing of it, Daniel Jones loses a lot of money. I would also just say, big picture, the Colts are probably going to be irrelevant until 2028. Because the real issue here is they lost their quarterback, who they planned on paying, and they don't have a first-round pick in either of the next two drafts because they traded them for Sauce Gardner, who is also hurt.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if I told you this? What if they spin around and they sign Mac Jones?
You going to outbid the Vikings?
You can. Right? Like, the Vikings right now are paying top dollar for a receiver in Justin Jefferson. Like, they're giving Justin Jefferson quarterback money. So, are they, and they're paying some defensive pieces, and they don't have a ton of draft capital, so they don't have a lot of, like, cheap talent on their roster. And you got to make a decision on Jordan Addison at some point, too. Like, I don't know if they're going to be in play for that.
And I guess the Colts don't really have a choice because they spent the two first-round picks. They have to find a quarterback by hook or by crook. Obviously, if you fall into Riley Leonard being any good, that's the best-case scenario. But, boy, is that really a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Richardson's toast. They got to find somebody they can trade for or somebody they can sign.
Yeah.
But it's now really tough for them to be good, not just the end of this season, but the next two seasons.
Yeah.
And it's just brutal. It's the worst timing imaginable. If Daniel Jones has this exact injury 5 weeks ago, the Colts' future is in a measurably better spot.
For sure, because you don't make the Sauce trade. You still have some of those picks. And you're probably not bringing back Daniel Jones after the injury, but you at least can either draft a guy or you can find someone in free agency this offseason.
I want to ask you something about a game we didn't really talk about. I did end up betting. I heard Carm was on it, and it convinced me. I said it would be the cider pass, but I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Vikings 31-0 over Washington. Jaden Daniels played in the first half of the game, looked really bad, and then got hurt again, which just
got blown up.
Begs the question, why play him at all? What are you playing for? Just shelf him until next season. Dan Quinn's going to screw this whole thing up.
I will say, like, if he was cleared and ready to go, I'd play him. It's not like Jaden Daniels is a finished product. Even when he played this year, he didn't look very good. Like, I think there is still something to, all right, let's get some reps for this guy moving forward. It's not like he's fast-tracking his way to the Hall of Fame. He had a great rookie season, and he's followed up by a pretty shitty second season, even when he was healthy at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
So I still would have given him the reps if he was completely healthy. Still, it seems like they held him out because of precautionary reasons. That's what they said after the game. If this was a game of consequence, he would have been back in the game.
Viking side of it, the JJ stat line isn't anything you'll write home about. 16 of 23, 163 yards, 3 touchdowns. I'll say, having watched this game, some of the throws were really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Layered, ripping the ball, a few seam routes, he saw it and just ripped it. It was kind of that pitch and catch thing, you know, Kevin O'Connell talked about throughout the week, get him to play without thinking.
Yeah.
It looked like it saw it on the field. So I would ask you, we're betting Dallas this week, right? We answer the 9 resurgence with the bad JJ is loading up.
And then you got Dallas coming off of the long week, too. Yeah, that's a good look ahead spot from you.
All I wanted to ask there. Mm-hmm. Bengals-Bills, who does it say more about? The Bills are in this game every week.
Yeah,
it's insane.
I mean, to be honest, I think it says a little bit more about the Bengals in a good way. It's probably too little too late at this point, but it's like this is what you can look like when you have Joe Burrow. The defense is what it is, and I'm not even going to really shit on the defense because when
Burrow melted the game away.
Well, yeah, that, and then also you're playing in snow, too. It's always going to be advantage offense when you're playing in snow. Yeah, Burrow throws the two untimely interceptions. You had a double-digit lead decently late into this game, and then you let it all go away. But it is fun to watch Burrow when he's got these weapons. And, like, the catch that T. Higgins made.
Yeah, insane.
A couple of them that he made were just incredible. And the way that he finds all of these different targets, Gesicki, Jamar, the way that they get all these guys involved. Chase Brown had himself a nice game. It's fun watching these offensive football games. Cincinnati, will they ever figure out the defensive side of the ball? Probably not. But Buffalo, like, this is who Buffalo is. They're going to play in these shootouts. You'll win some, you'll lose some. I would really fear Buffalo going up against a good defense in the playoffs. Like, if they play against Houston or even Denver, really, I don't know if I'd like the Buffalo side.
So I thought this said a little bit more about the Bills.
Okay.
Because, again, I've been the guy who will say, defensively, I don't buy that they're Super Bowl caliber. Their defense blows. Mm-hmm. And they were getting gutted by Burrow before the turnovers. You know how I feel about turnovers. There's some luck involved. Mm-hmm. Things have to go exactly right. But what I will say about Buffalo is I thought Sean McDermott in this game was excellent, just purely in a decision-making standpoint. He's had issues in the past where he's been a little more conservative. This game, he went fucking nuts. Yeah. I mean, this was balls to the wall. The third possession of the game, you're down 14-3. You go for it on fourth down twice in a first half possession and go for two on the touchdown to make it a three-point game. Yeah. And then at the end of the game, I thought it was even better what he did, sitting fourth and three from the three-yard line. Maybe it was fourth and goal from the three-yard line. And instead of kicking the field goal to go up seven, you keep the offense on the field to go up two possessions. I loved it. Because it is like we aren't winning this game with our defense, well, and it's acknowledging that.
I wonder how much of this, if there's no snow on the ground in this game, does he make the same decisions?
Maybe not. And that's certainly interesting. I think also if his quarterback's not Josh Allen, he's not making these decisions. But I liked that I saw, okay, I have a superhuman quarterback. Let's just go nuts. And we're going to play to win. We're not going to play for overtime. We're not going to play to tie. If Buffalo's willing to understand that this is the way they have to win football games, there's still going to be a tough out in the AFC.
Yeah. It's just I don't know if you can sustain it and win three playoff games.
I agree. And I think, the idea they're not going to win their division. And I know a lot of people have brought up, oh, did Buffalo save their season? And now if they beat New England this weekend, they can win the division? No. It's almost impossible to find a way where Buffalo wins tiebreakers against the Patriots, even if they split the games. So I don't think they're winning the division. They're going to have to go on the road. They have a shitty defense. And I'll tell you, we'll get to it in a minute, but whoever pulls Houston in the AFC, God bless you.
I don't want to see that.
Good luck. Mm-hmm. Broncos Raiders. Did the NFL fix the game? Your thoughts?
I mean, by the letter of the rule, the guy did what he did was a penalty. You got to let the guy get up. What was it, Lockett?
Yeah.
You got to let Lockett get up. He didn't let him get up. Like, it was stupid. Like, I get there's the conspiracy theories, and of course it had to take place in Vegas, too. So you know that threw everything for a loop there, but I don't think they fixed the game. It was just one of those funny coincidences that not only flips the spread, but also the total, too.
It's also a game where if you really had action on it, that's a you issue.
Look inward.
It's a YP, not an MP. I believe I said when we talked about this game on Friday, you won't catch me putting anything on this. If you bet Broncos Raiders, that's on you. All right, let's get to the local game, the biggest game of the week. Yeah. Probably the game of the year to this point, to be honest. And it lived up to the billing.
Oh, yeah.
Bears-Packers. Who does it say more about?
I think it says equal about both teams. You know how
it's
I
a cop out, but I felt the same way.
I know that the final score isn't as close as this other game I'm going to bring up, but I feel the same way that I felt about the Seahawks after they lost to the Rams. Like, it further validated my opinion that the Rams were the best team in football. It further validated my opinion that the Packers are this super team that is one of the best in the NFC, one of the best in all football. The defense is what it is. And it also made me feel like, all right, the Bears are a legitimate team, too. Now, can they win the Super Bowl? Probably not. But Can they win a round or two in the playoffs? Absolutely. And it made me think, too, the next time these two teams meet up in a couple of weeks, the Bears absolutely can beat the Packers.
I think if you're a Bears fan, you should have the ultimate confidence that when they're coming to Soldier Field, you're beating them.
Yes.
I think you proved it on the field in Green Bay. You can beat them in your house.
Yes.
And you will beat them in your
house. Like, you're one or two plays away from at least forcing overtime.
If you made me pick who it says more about, I would say it says more about the Bears. Because, look, they proved this run game is not a mirage. What they did to Philly, where they out-physicaled and out-toughed the Eagles, it wasn't fake. That was legit. You go up to Green Bay, and you make that defense look tired in the second half.
Yeah.
Dude, this is the way that they're building this offense has so much legitimacy that it only emboldened my opinion. In 2026, you're winning the North. You're getting a playoff game at Soldier Field, and you are contending to go and win a Super Bowl. Like, that's where this team is going.
You're a couple defensive pieces away.
Yesterday, it wasn't the same result, but it felt very similar to when the Lions went up in 2022 and ended the Packers' season at Lambeau and announced, we're here.
Yeah.
Like, the Bears, they didn't win the game. But marching down the field the way that they did and exhausting the Packers' defense and doing it with the ground game that's being schemed by Ben Johnson, it felt like the announcement of, no, we're fucking real. Yeah. And I think that's why you got Josh Jacobs after the game in the tunnel going, that ain't the same Bears. That's a different team. Like, you've announced you belong at the top of the group, the top of the class.
I mean, if Caleb Williams either throws the ball earlier to Cole Kmet or puts 5 more points on the power bar on his toss.
You're going for 2 to win.
Whether you get it or not is a question that will forever remain in the ether, and frankly doesn't really matter either way. If you win or lose, at that point you will have played one of the best teams in football to a point. Either you won or you lost the game at that point. And I think you're feeling even better about it. But listen, the quarterback play has to be a little bit more even for four quarters. There were drops, but there were also missed throws. It's kind of just been the tale of Caleb Williams' season. What did he start the game? Like 1 for 7?
Yeah.
Right?
2 for 7, something like that.
That 0 for 5 was the start. Right. Like, that cannot happen. But yeah, you're a couple defensive pieces away. And it's why you and I certainly would bang the drum for this team needed to trade for a pass rusher in the offseason. Why couldn't you have been the team that made the Micah Parsons trade? Because if you made the Micah Parsons trade, I think right now, in the here and the now, we're talking about the Bears as maybe even the favorite to win the Super Bowl if they had Micah Parsons right now.
I think they'd still need a little bit better quarterback play, but I can't fight you too hard when I see what the Patriots look like in the betting market. It's just, I've always felt this Bears team's out of schedule, and I'm never going to trust young quarterbacks when you get to the playoffs. I know Joe Burrow went to the Super Bowl in his second year. I think it's an exception that proves the rule more than anything. But it is like, the weak links right now are the quarterback and the defensive line. And you'll have an offseason where you can address the defensive line and an offseason with Ben Johnson for the quarterback. And I just believe those two things will improve. And you're building a team that's going to contend to win it all the next 2 seasons.
Yep.
That they proved it to me in a loss. It was the ultimate credibility loss.
Yeah. And you didn't cover a spread. It sucks. But like,
It only sucks for some people.
Yeah, but I would say this, like,
it was nice.
It was a one possession game. The score makes it look like it was a wider margin than it really was, but I think you boil this down, it was a one possession game that you lost. You didn't lose by 7, you lost by 1 possession.
Yep. All right, last game to talk about. We can stick a fork in them, right?
Go ahead.
They're done.
Go ahead.
Texans Chiefs. The Chiefs are dead. The playoff hopes now sit at 13% among the odds. If anybody thinks that the Chiefs, after going 6-7, are just going to wake up and go 4-0, I got a bridge to sell you. I know their schedule's easy, but watching them is so unbelievably uninspiring. And Mahomes, 14-33, Kelsey dropping an easy first down, sitting on the bench. He knows that was their season. They're done. But who it said more about? I think the Texans, just the way they continue to be gritty and gut out these victories. And I know it got stuck at 10 points for a while. You're in a tie. I know the Chiefs. I think they're dead. I don't think they're very good. But at Arrowhead against that team, it's still a difficult spot.
Yeah.
and the way the Texans have weathered the storm without their quarterback and leaning on this defense, I think they can race to 20 their way to the Super Bowl.
You shut out the Kansas City Chiefs in the first half for the first time in the Andy Reid era. He's been coaching there for over a decade, since 2013. First time in the Andy Reid era, he's been shut out in the first half at home. At Arrowhead, one of the best home field advantages in football. Yeah, like this Texans defense is legit, and you're right. It's the last team I would want to face in any sort of playoff scenario. Like looking at all of those teams, too, it's not like we're talking about exceptional quarterbacks top to bottom in the AFC right now. Certainly, you'd take the quarterbacks in the NFC over the quarterbacks in the AFC. You've got Josh Allen, and then you've got Drake May, but what's Drake May going to look like in his first spin in the playoffs? We haven't seen any of the other guys really do anything spectacular lately in the playoffs.
I tell you right now, the way that this is setting up the current playoff picture, if it does end up being New England as the two hosting the 7-seed Houston Texans, I'm betting the Texans on the money line.
Yeah.
Because I just, a second-year quarterback, and we can be honest about what the Patriots are, they haven't played anybody, a second-year quarterback going in a playoff environment against that defense, nah, I'm good.
Yep.
No shot.
Yeah. And especially when you're dealing with some offensive line injuries as well for New England. Like, and that's where I feel like Houston really took advantage, too. You had the offensive line deficiencies, and you look at this playoff picture, like, point at the offensive line that scares you. I think Denver's is pretty damn good. But like point at the offensive line where you're like, oh, yeah, like that's one of the best units in all football.
That's my point with Houston, and it's why I bet them to win the AFC, and it's why I'm so bullish on them. The offensive environment on the AFC side of things is really bleak.
Yeah.
Outside of Buffalo, there's nothing you look at that you go, yeah, that's an elite offense. Mm-hmm. And Houston is an elite defense. So it's just, can you get to 20 and win your way to the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Where you'll probably get clapped by the Rams or whoever gets out of the NFC? Because I got the NFC is nuts. Yeah. Like, I think the Rams are a Super Bowl team. I think the Bears are potentially a Super Bowl team after yesterday. Green Bay, absolutely a Super Bowl team. Mm-hmm. It's hard to deny Philly being the defending champs.
Yeah.
San Francisco has been there, done that so much. Seattle looks like a Super Bowl team.
Seattle gets in, they go, yeah.
Like, it's just all of these teams look Super Bowl caliber. And then you have Detroit sitting there at 8-5,
yeah.
Just on the outside looking in. Would it shock anyone if Dan Campbell got his group to rise up and go? The AFC side, I look and I'm like, kind of Buffalo and Houston are the only two I really buy.
Yeah. And I mean, how many times have we seen Buffalo not come up in the big spot? And then New England is like, we'll see. I guess you could probably say, especially if everything runs through Denver, you could say Denver too, because that defense, I think, is maybe not as good as Houston, but it is right on the doorstep of Houston's. So
I know the record's undeniable, but there's something about Denver. I just, they seem like frauds a little bit to me.
No, they do. And I'm with you. But when you have a defense like that, it can carry you through a couple
like,
rounds.
Perfect way to put it. And I get, we just said the NFC's great and the AFC might not be. Mm-hmm. Denver's sitting at 11-2 and you look at them and go, okay, you're a Super Bowl team. They're dogs at home to Green Bay this week.
Yeah.
Like it's just, that's kind of where I draw the line of, I don't really buy it.
Yeah. The one thing, though, is it is the best home field advantage in the sport because of the altitude. And if you're playing home games all the way through up until you get to the Super Bowl, that's a tough hurdle. Like, ask any team in the AFC. They would love for a world where Denver is, like, the AFC doesn't run through Denver.
All right. Anything else you want to bring up before we get out of here?
No, I think we're all good. That was, again, best football week of the year.
I loved
what it was.
And I think it's only going to get better. I mean, the rest of the season in the NFL, the way that the NFC is playing out. Yeah. I think if you're a fan of a team that's on the bubble of the NFC playoffs, this is going to be as stressful as like you could possibly imagine. If you're a neutral observer, kick your feet up. Like, I'm going to make my popcorn. This rocks on the NFC side. I think it's great. Once we get to the playoffs, I mean, this is what the NFL wants. There is no middle class. There is no great team. And everybody at the top is very close to each other. Yeah. The playoffs are going to be awesome.
Yep.
That'll do it for us. For Tyler Aki, I'm Shane Orling. It is the Pick Aside Podcast.